Hey, welcome to week one. That's right, the first week of CSF's new spring core group curriculum, also known as Jesus Comes to Campus. I'm Dylan, and I'm here with my pal, Derek.
Woo!
That's Derek with the woo. And we are going to talk about the Bible. So we are going through this semester the book of John. Not all of it. We're going through some specific stories, about 10 stories. Not even about, exactly 10 stories. And here's what we need you to do, our friend, the listener. If you're a part of CSF's discipleship or you're in a core group, you have a workbook with you, hopefully. If you don't, find your leader and get one. But what we want you to do is we want you to go through the daily time, the first section that you spend the time in the scriptures. Do that for yourself and then come listen to this podcast. So see you later. Go spend some time with the Lord and then come back. We want this kind of conversation to fuel your discussion during groups. So catch you later. See you in a few days. All right, bye.
Push pause.
Yep, hit pause. And we're back. So, Derek, before we jump into kind of your specific passage, let's do just like a quick overview of John, because we're going to be spending a lot of time in it. So, Book of John, what is it? What do we need to know?
Oh, man, John is such a difficult book to give a brief overview to.
Yeah.
So first of
broad
all,
topic.
You might hear it called, so we've been calling it the Book of John. You might hear it called the Gospel of John. The Gospels are the first four books of the New Testament, and they are recorded by people who knew Jesus or people who knew Jesus. And they're just sort of something like mini biographies about Jesus's life and trying to really hit the highlights of who he was, what he said, what he did, and also tell it in a way that is compelling to people. And so John's gospel really stands out when you compare the four. The first three actually have a lot of similarities. The chronology is very similar. The flow of the story is very similar. But then you read John, and it just seems like a hard left turn and is a lot different than the first three. You'll notice, especially if you just sort of read them one after the other. And there are different reasons that people have suggested why this is. We don't have to get into those, but you'll just notice a different flair in John's gospel. And I think it gives it a really interesting flavor. We see Jesus almost in a different light. And just note that whenever you approach a story about Jesus, and sometimes stories are going to appear back to back, a lot of times those are intentional on the part of the author. I mean, that's true of really any gospel, but John really seems to take that to another level and makes the connection sometimes more overt. And he's going to tell a story with the way that he has, just the way that he's organized the material, the source material. When he tells his story about Jesus, even just the way that he puts stories side by side, and there's these things that he calls the seven signs that are pointing to who Jesus is. They're supposed to tell us something about who Jesus is. And then even really notably, the passage that we're talking about today is usually called John's prologue, the first 18 verses. That's really unique even when you compare it to the others. And again, they're all sort of trying to give us a fuller picture of who this Jesus guy is.
Yeah, that's great. I've heard some people call it like you see the divinity of Jesus more in John, which I think is a pretty crude way to say it, because really, if you read Matthew or Mark or Luke, it's like the guy's doing crazy miracles left and right. So it's not like his divinity isn't showing up in the other gospels. But the way it starts, kind of, you can see that there's like a general kind of laser pointer just going right at like, hey, this guy, he's God. Beginning with, basically, in the beginning was the Word, which is what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. And in a lot of ways, this prologue, some biblical scholars have called this just like a condensed version of the entire gospel. And even the gospel has been called an extended passion narrative, that it really builds really quickly to Jesus's death, his suffering on the cross, and is in a lot of ways a commentary on that. There's all this like foreshadowing that goes on. And there is just like this mystery about John. And this is why so many people, what I really love about John, and then I'll shut up and we can start talking about the passage, is that most people, when you ask them, like most, let's say, people have been Christians for a long time, if there's a new Christian that comes to them and says, I want to start reading the Bible, where should I start? Very rarely are they going to say, start at Genesis and read through Revelation. Mm-hmm. Usually people tell you to start with the Gospel of John, because it gives you a really interesting picture of who Jesus is and a really clear picture of who Jesus is. But then also, it's probably the book more than any other that has inspired just this sort of depth of theological thought, biblical studies scholarship. So it's both for people who are just getting introduced to Jesus and people who have known Jesus for a long time. Could just never exhaust the riches in this gospel, I think.
Yep, I love it. Well, so each of the gospels kind of dig into who Jesus is, and we'll kind of start today talking about why would Jesus's identity matter. But before we get there, let's just even talk about in the beginning was the Word. Mm-hmm. This is something that maybe sounds almost Christian-y, like in the beginning was the Word, and we use the Word for other things, like the Word equaling like the Bible. You know, we'll mm-hmm. be like, I need to spend some time in the Word this morning. Or, you know, like the Beatles song, the Word is love, or whatever. I don't know. Just like the Word is not a phrase to me that I think naturally leads to the meaning that John is using. So tell me more about this, the Word. What does that mean?
I will, but before I do that, I'm going to tell you more about something else. I'm not being a very good guest on this podcast.
No, do what you want.
But in the beginning was the Word. So I'll talk about the Word in a second, but let's just quickly talk about the in the beginning, because this is actually really interesting too. These are the first three words of John's gospel, in the beginning. And for those who are familiar with the biblical text, there are going to be some alarm bells going off. Like, oh, wait, I think I've heard this before. Genesis 1, the first book of the Bible, first book of the Old Testament, starts in the beginning. And so I think this is very intentional on the part of John. He is trying to take his readers, his hearers in this case, back to the first chapter of Genesis. And of course, what is that recording in Genesis 1? It's recording a creation narrative. And we're learning how God made the heavens and the earth. And it's this really poetic, beautiful telling of how God does this. And then so back to John 1, in the beginning was the Word. I think what he intends here, and we see it throughout the rest of the gospel, is he's also giving us a creation narrative. This John is a creation narrative. It's a narrative of new creation. And he's telling us how Jesus, in effect, brings this new creation about and changes this old order of creation and brings something very new. So that's how we start the gospel. Now let's talk about the Word. So the Greek word, I don't often want to go into the Greek. I think that's probably usually less helpful than it might seem. But here, I think it actually is really important. So the Greek word is logos. And I know some translators, like even David Bentley Hart is a translation. We were just talking about this recently with some friends. But he doesn't even translate it. Like when he translates the Greek to the English, he doesn't even translate this word into the word logos to word, which is often what you find in your English translation. So in the beginning was the logos, and the logos was with God, and the logos was God.
And he does that because it's so rich in meaning. And is something that almost like we don't, there are certain words we don't translate in the Bible because they have kind of a richness that to translate them loses the meaning, I'm guessing.
That's right. And so word does like have a connection with the Greek word logos, like our English word is not necessarily a bad translation. In a lot of cases of logos, it would be a very fine translation. But here, it's pretty clear that John's trying to work with some different themes and concepts, the way that he uses it. And I'm not going to go through them all here, but if you go to this, if you reference the student book, I sort of list out there the sort of Jewish understanding of logos and the Greek understanding of logos, because there's really a rich history in both of these sort of traditions of how they use the word logos. And I really think John is playing on both of these because he's writing in Greek. And so I think it's clear that he has some of the Greek concepts in mind, but he's speaking to a Jewish audience. Many of the early Christians are Jews. And so they're going to have this background and bring it to bear on the conversation. And you just get this really interesting collision of ideas that sort of culminate in Jesus. And in doing so, it's also important to note that while he has these backgrounds in mind, he is using the word still in a different way than either of them used it, than the sort of Greek or Jewish background. He's using it sort of in a fresh way where he's calling a person, an individual person, Jesus Christ, the logos. And that's not exactly how these other backgrounds would have understood the word. So there's a lot of interesting things going on with even just him, just these first couple verses and trying to describe who Jesus is from John's perspective.
That's really interesting. So it's like two different backgrounds have said, you know, give me the abstract answer to this huge question about existence and life. And John goes, well, it's a guy.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's,
yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah. I mean, like, so yeah, just as an example in Greek thought, the logos is like the guiding and ordering principle of the universe. It is, you know, the high sort of high ideal in Greek philosophy. And here John is applying it to a human man who can be touched, who ate, who walked around. So what he's doing is really pretty radical here.
That's really interesting. So then, it moves from in the beginning was the word and, you know, even like the meaning of logos, but then how does that actually impact who Jesus is and who we're going to see, in like how we're going to see Jesus in the rest of the gospel? Why does this matter for what we're about to read? What's the impact here of, okay, great. This guy, crazy statement about this guy being the meaning of life, the answer to all these big philosophical questions. But in the end, why does that matter?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think what John is doing is he's setting up the rest of the gospel in many ways. Again, it's a prologue and it looks very different than the rest of the gospel, but he's trying to give us an early snapshot and some really important background information to understand the rest of the gospel. And Jesus, as it says in, or well, let's just call him the Logos, as it says in John 1:14, is the one who becomes flesh. But we see in John 1, in the beginning was the Logos, and the Logos was with God, and the Logos was God. So this person is divine, and yet has, as John says, become flesh, has taken on flesh. So this is really a remarkable idea when you think about it, that God, who especially in the Jewish conception of God, the one creator of everything, has become flesh and has become a human man. And so this is what John has in mind from the very beginning. And the rest of this gospel is going to sort of clarify this, but really, that's what is at stake in this prologue, is who Jesus is, and of course, the rest of the gospel, which is what we're going to be talking about, but who Jesus is, and then not only that, but how Jesus begins to change our conceptions of divinity, of what it means to live a righteous life. Jesus comes and gives us a different picture, a different way of life, and again, in a way that is really pretty radical. And I use a few different examples in the student books as well, or talk about how, you know, this identity of Jesus really changes the way now that we see the rest of the story. And the example that I like to use, there's plenty of examples. You could pick up your favorite, but you know, the sixth sense is a good example of, and this is a spoiler alert, but at the end you find out like Bruce Willis himself is dead, and he's talking to this kid who he says he sees dead people. When at first Bruce Willis thinks he's just like helping this kid out and thinks he's still alive, but then realizes, you realize at the end of the movie, and he realizes that, oh wait, he's been dead the whole time. Well, what this does, what it forces us to do, is to go back and then reevaluate the rest of the film, like everything that's happened up until that point, and you start to get a fuller picture of what's happened. Like previous scenes start to take on a different meaning. And I think this is what happens with Jesus and why his identity is so important, like who Jesus is, why Christian theologians have talked about this and thought about this for a long time, is because it really changes the rest of the narrative. It changes everything that happened before Jesus, everything we read in the Old Testament, and it changes everything after as well. And so this is, you know, there's arguably no more important question than the identity of Jesus.
Yeah, that's great. And I think a really simple comparison would be like, to me, when I read the book of Mark, if you read the whole book, it's like, you hear these stories of what Jesus did, and it's like, whoa, who is this guy? Who is this guy? Who is this guy? As you get through the book. And then by the end, the person who really gets it is the centurion at the end, who looks up to Jesus and says, sure, this man was the Son of God. And, or if it's not a centurion, it's like one of the guys who was at the cross.
Right. Yeah.
But it kind of unpacks who Jesus is over the course of the book. And this one just comes right out of the gate and says, everything you're going to read beyond this is impacted by this reality that we're claiming Jesus is fully divine and fully human, which is pretty wild. So I have another question though, because there's an identity statement here about Jesus, but also I think there's an identity statement about us and kind of the purposes of God. And it is kind of tied to the structure of John 1 and how it's written in kind of like this, what's called a chiasm. Can you tell me more about that? What it means? I've heard of this before. But for those of us who haven't heard of chiasm or chiastic writing, really quickly give us an overview and how it points to one of the main kind of points of John 1.
Sure. Yeah. So a chiasm, just really briefly, is a sort of form of writing in which you're trying to emphasize something that is central. And chiasms are something that you might see in different films or different books that you've read. But basically, it's like looking in a mirror, and it's like something in the introduction that happens at the beginning of the story is mirrored by something that happens at the end. And then you sort of keep taking steps towards the middle, is that there, it's sort of mirrored along the way. So it would go like A, B, C, and then like C star, B star, A star, if that makes sense, is that there's a sort of mirroring process. And then it culminates in what's in the middle. And so in John, the sort of middle, the center of the chiasm is to emphasize that the Word was made flesh and that God came down to make those who believe in him children of God. That's sort of the point of John. It's the point of this prologue. It's where the center of this prologue is, and it's what John is going to be driving at the rest of his gospel. And so we talk a lot about Jesus, but of course, like this is the very few verses, John is giving us a sort of equivalent statement of Jesus and God that we really have to take seriously, and that, you know, our ideas about God, we bring them to this gospel and we have them evaluated in light of who Jesus is. That's going to be a really important theme for John, and it's really kind of the point of this prologue.
Yeah, that's great. So then that to me really clearly ties into, okay, so we're getting identity statements about the divinity of Jesus, that this opening section is kind of a condensed version of the gospel, and it points to him becoming flesh so that he could make us children of God. But why was the what's called the incarnation, why is that necessary for him to be able to make us children of God? Is that then kind of the connection? Because I don't necessarily see it, but yeah, the incarnation and becoming children of God, how does that all work? Why is it happening? What's going on here?
Yeah, that's a good question that theologians have argued about and wrestled about for
thousands of years. Great, I'm just going to put this huge question on your shoulders.
Yeah, so there's this great church father, Gregory of Nazianzus is his name. It's kind of a hard word to say, but you can find this a little bit about this in the student's book as well. But what he basically argued is that the unassumed in Christ's humanity is the unhealed. So what he says is like that Jesus, who is God, who was with God in the beginning and is God himself, comes down, becomes flesh, and in doing so, in taking on flesh, allows us to participate in his humanity so that we can be saved. Because clearly, apart from him, like we are headed to destruction, we are lost apart from him, and our humanity is bent away. That's what happens with sin, is it gets bent away from God, and there's this wedge that's driven between us and makes relationship with God impossible even. And this is how God is able to overcome that, is by becoming a human person, and this is what happens in Jesus Christ. And so what Gregory means by when he says the unassumed is the unhealed, it means that Jesus had to become flesh, and not just partly flesh, and not just a little bit of flesh, not just like 50% man and 50% God. That's not what Jesus is. He's fully man and fully God. And he had to become fully man, fully a human being, so that we could be healed. Because if any part of us has not been taken up at the incarnation, has not become flesh, has not become flesh in the Logos, then it's unhealed. It remains unhealed. And so, by his taking up our fallen humanity, we are able to participate in his new humanity. Again, we're talking about new creation here in the beginning. We're able to participate in his new humanity, and that, in effect, is how we are saved, or at least that's one theme that we see in the Bible that's trying to explain our salvation.
That's great. So we don't get the cross, which is where we're headed as we begin this semester, as we begin this curriculum, where we're headed that direction, but we don't get that without Jesus becoming flesh and dwelling among us.
That's right. And that, I think it's really important to recognize that that is what makes the cross so significant. Like if without John 1, without this explanation of who Jesus is, then Jesus is just another man who's died on the cross, yeah. Right? That there are a lot of men were crucified then, and nothing came of it, and there's nothing special, even revolutionaries, even great teachers. But it's the fact that he is God, that he is the Logos, as John is, as John writes about it here. That's what makes the cross so significant, and that's what makes it such a powerful event and an efficacious event. It's what makes it effective in the first place. And then, of course, the resurrection and ascension as well, which we'll get to those in later weeks. But I think this identity point, like without this, you don't get anything else in the gospel. This is central. It's fundamental. It's the foundation for everything else.
That's really great. And just like, you know, something that's fun for me is when you read this and suddenly you read through the rest of the book, there are moments that kind of become funny because you get a little bit of dramatic irony, you know, where you know what's going on in the story, but the characters don't know what's going on in the story. So like, you know, you read a couple of chapters later and Nicodemus comes up to Jesus and calls him teacher. And you're mm-hmm. like, Nicodemus, what are you doing, man? This guy's God. I know it. I'm reading the book. So you almost like see the folly of human beings that don't really get who Jesus is because you've read John 1. And so it adds some, at least some like literary fun to reading the Bible. But I think it gives you even some fun pictures to see like, whoa, this is how people interacted with the God man, fully human, fully divine, 100% and 100%. He like defies percentage and fractions and mathematics, which is crazy. If you want to read more about that, go read Orthodoxy by G.K. Chesterton. There's a great yeah. chapter in there on paradoxes. But yeah, so this is great. Derek, any like final thoughts about John 1 that you want to leave with our friends?
Yeah, just a couple of things. First of all, this first week, your head might be spinning a little bit. This is a little bit more dense theology than will be normal in these podcasts. But this is what John gives us, and I think it is really important to start here and to try to get a good grasp on who Jesus is. And that's going to be important to wrestle with your students, but make clear with them as well that, hey, we're not just going to come and talk about like really fine points of theology and talk about this Greek word, the Logos. Like, ooh, that's really cool. Don't set that up as an expectation in your group. But this week is just going to be a little bit different. It's going to feel a little different, like any good prologue. It just is a little bit different. But another point that I really want to hit home, and that we really get at the end of the prologue in John 1:18, is that this really has, I mean, drive this home in your groups, that this has enormous implications for how we see God. And the reality is, it doesn't matter who's in your group, it doesn't matter what their background is, they're going to have thoughts on who God is. They're going to have these ideas of who God is. But really the point of the prologue is that Jesus is the one who shows us God. Like, this is who we know, this is how we know who God is. And again, John 1:18 says, no one has ever seen God. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known. And that's really what we want them to take away in this first week. I mean, along with this identity piece, but that is the identity piece, is Jesus' divinity, his full divinity. And whenever we have ideas about God that are not congruent with what Jesus says and does, that are different, then we need to bring those and allow them to be reevaluated in the light of Jesus' identity.
That's great. Yeah, it just sounds like John is saying, pay attention. Because if you're claiming that this guy in first century Israel is actually, to you, you know, if you were in first century Israel, you would know who Yahweh was. And he's saying, basically saying, oh yeah, you know, this is Yahweh in the flesh. This is God in the bod. You would pretty much think he's saying, so pay attention to all the stuff that I'm going to tell you after this. This is like the perfect prologue to tell you just, hey, like focus in. This is not just some other rabbi or teacher or guy who walked around. So wild. It's a hot start.
Fun stuff.
Yep. Well, hey, Derek, thanks so much.
Absolutely.
We'll see you in a few weeks. But hey, if you are not a part of CSF and you want to find some of our written curriculum that goes with this podcast, you can find it at ukcsf.org. Thanks so much. Mm-hmm.